Good evening, everyone. Thanks for joining us tonight. So let me tell you a little bit about our presenters. So Dr. Rachel Waller is an associate professor in the College of Education. She has a BS in elementary education from Minnesota State University, Moorhead, a master's in education and reading education from the University of North Dakota, and a PhD in teacher education from the University of North Dakota. Her research centers around access to literacy for marginalized populations and best practices in literacy teacher education. She's also the current president of Montana State Reading Association, and she was also the recipient of the Faculty Excellence Award in 2018. So congrats. And then we also have Dr. Melanie Reeves. She is an assistant professor in the College of Education. She has a BS in history and writing and rhetoric and a master's of teacher education from Eastern Oregon University. After teaching at the elementary level for 15 years, she obtained her PhD in curriculum and instruction literacy education from the University of Wyoming in 2014. Her research focuses on literacy as culture creator imbued with effective ways of being. So I can tell you this is going to be a really awesome presentation. So welcome.
Hey, good evening, everyone. We have one more person we'd like to introduce. This is Catherine Teal. She's a graduate student. She has helped us tremendously with the technology that you're going to see tonight, downloading videos, finding videos. So we really want to give her a big thank you for all of her hard work. So I'm Rachel, and this is Melanie, and we are going to talk about Sesame Street tonight. A little different than the other presentations you've seen in this series. We are, as Darlene said, we are, and Linda said, we are from the education department, so we have focused more on monsters with children, and so I think you're in for a real treat. We're going to have a good time tonight. We have lots of really fun videos to share with you and are excited to share our research. So Sesame Street has probably been one of the most viewed shows in television history. On average, it has about 6 million viewers, mostly children, each week. And there are more than 82 million Sesame Street graduates who grew up watching the show. So by a show of hands, do we have any Sesame Street graduates in the room? Okay, so I am a Sesame Street graduate. My two children are here. They are Sesame Street graduates. So I have been through it twice, both as a child and as a mom. And we're gonna tell you a little bit about our personal connection with it to start. So I'm a child. As a child, I grew up in a very rural area. Had about 3 television stations. So Sesame Street was a part of my daily routine. I did not attend a preschool, but went to kindergarten, pretty prepared for kindergarten because I had watched my Sesame Street pretty much every day. So I knew my letters and numbers. When I went to kindergarten, we also watched Sesame Street every day. It was part of the curriculum at my school. So I have watched many, many, many episodes of Sesame Street. And love the show. I think it's so funny and so entertaining, but also so educational. Oh, sorry.
Is my mic working? Yeah, okay. So I too grew up with Sesame Street. I can easily tell you I was born in 1966 and this started in 69. So as you can imagine, I was definitely a preschooler when it started. And I remember it just being on every afternoon in our home as I was growing up. And I too also remember it playing in my kindergarten classroom at different times. And it has stayed with me my whole life, and we'll be sharing a little bit about other connections, but my son, who's 28 now, also grew up watching Sesame Street. And also as it morphed into the Muppets, which some of you may be familiar with the Muppet Show, and that was a favorite of ours when he was little too, so.
Okay. So we're going to start by talking about the origins of Sesame Street, and it actually had a quite humble beginning. So in 1968, Joan Cooney, who eventually became the executive producer of the show, hosted a dinner party along with her husband, Tim, and invited guests were Lloyd and Mary Morissette. Lloyd Morissette was vice president at the Carnegie Foundation, and Mary Morissette was a psychologist. They also had a three-year-old daughter who was a guest at the dinner party, whose name was Sarah, and she was mesmerized by watching commercials on television. So you can kind of picture this. The adults are busy chatting, and Sarah's busy watching TV, and she's completely mesmerized by the commercials. So brilliance struck like a bolt from the gods, and Morissette posed a question: do you think that television could be used to teach young children? So this conversation had really never occurred before. And at the same time, though, there was a conversation happening simultaneously about preschool. And the idea of preschool was just starting to emerge. And people were thinking, maybe children could learn key concepts about school prior to coming to school. So while there are many mechanisms at the time developed in early childhood education, a mechanism to deliver this information to a wide audience was lacking. And so television seemed like the perfect solution. So prior to Sesame Street, there were a few shows on television for kids. Mostly they were aimed at either education or entertainment, but there was no show that really tried to do both. Most television shows at the time also were geared toward very localized markets, and there weren't a lot of national television shows. So after a lot of hard work, funding was secured for the Children's Television Network through the Carnegie Corporation, the Ford Foundation, and the U.S. federal government. So Sesame Street was very innovative and groundbreaking. One of the things that was really groundbreaking about Sesame Street was that it took place in the inner city and representing groups that had been very largely underrepresented in television. They intentionally hired African-American actors and really tried to make it as both entertaining and captivating to young audiences. You guys probably are familiar with the show Captain Kangaroo. I'm also a Captain Kangaroo graduate. But the problematic with Captain Kangaroo is that it was not on public television. So in order to pay for it, there were a lot of commercials geared toward two things: toys and sugar cereal. So not the best for kids, which is maybe why I still really like my sugary snacks, right? I had a lot of commercial watching as a child. So for this presentation, we study the monsters of Sesame Street and how they've shaped the social lives of children for the nearly 50 years that it's been on the air. I'm going to take you on a journey tonight of four of the most influential and personal favorites of our monsters: Snuffleupagus, the Count, Cookie Monster, and Oscar the Grouch. We're going to look at this through the lens of intersubjectivity theory and specifically look at how Sesame Street has created shared meaning and experience to our nation and beyond. Okay, so like we said, prior to Sesame Street, most of the television offered on TV was either really dry and boring, with the teacher just talking at a blackboard and being recorded, or the opposite, things like the Howdy Doody Show or Romper Room, that had really no true pedagogy. It was just purely for entertainment and mostly like slapstick humor. So to really make the curriculum intentional, the Carnegie Foundation brought in many experts in the field of education from Cambridge and Harvard, and geniuses, and you probably recognize some of these names: Mari Sendak, who is the author of Where the Wild Things Are, Joe Rossborough, famous musician, Frank Oz, and of course, Jim Henson. So the setting for Sesame Street was very intentional. They wanted to be realistic and wanted to be able to separate fantasy from reality.
So the curriculum was very intentional by the creators of Sesame Street, and from the very beginning it involved the social and emotional development of children. In addition to the specific people that Dr. Waller mentioned, they brought together experts such as developmental psychologists, also child psychiatrists, artists, musicians, children's book writers, performers, sociologists, and they engaged in what they call freewheeling seminars. And in these seminars, they would together collaborate to figure out how can we put this curriculum together and what should the curriculum involve. And their first list was many pages long, and they said we can't possibly get all of this into the amount of episodes that we're making in our first season. And through a process of combining and coming up with categories, these are the four categories for their curriculum that they came up with: symbolic representation, cognitive processes, physical environment, and the social environment. So in the early 60s, as they got started, these four areas focused on things like math and language. So that's where we get letters and numbers and these kinds of things, geometric shapes. It focused on reasoning and problem solving, classification of things and ordering them. If you remember, one of these things is not like the other, which one of these things doesn't belong, something like that. Also social, moral, and affective development. Things about the self and your social roles. How do we become friends? How do we deal with disappointments and things like that became a focus on the social emotional development. So at every season as the show evolved, so did the curriculum. Every year they were very intentional about how is our curriculum developing? Do we need to make some changes? And so during this period of time, they brought in more cultural focus. So you saw more Latino, Latina, American culture represented, and they added Spanish words that students could learn and use. They added focusing on self-esteem and being able to enter social groups, and also thinking about divergent thinking, about how we can have different perspectives from each other. During this period of time, they worked on things like gender-based stereotypes, and this is where I remember seeing Maria fixing electronics and things like that. So they're trying to challenge, you know, what those stereotypes are. They focus more on even more ethnic diversity. And at this period of time, something really sad happened, and I actually remember it, even though I was more of a teenager at this time, is Mr. Hooper passed away. And they used this opportunity to actually talk about and teach kids about death and dying and that aspect of social emotional development. So in the mid-80s, they also added thinking about love and what love is and marriage during that time. We'll talk more about Snuffy's reveal during this time when we talk about Snuffleupagus in a little bit. And in the late 90s, they really had a four-season focus on race relations. And here they really brought in very specific scenes that they brought together to talk about how we need to interact together from diverse linguistic and cultural diverse ethnicities. There's also a focus on emergent literacy. So in our field, during this time is when a lot of early literacy research really blossomed. And we started to understand that children come to literacy emerging to it, and it's not like one day they're non-literate and the next day they are. So they recognized that and started integrating that into the curriculum. During the 2000s, there was a huge swing into healthy eating as well as helping others. And definitely helped along with President Obama and Michelle Obama's initiatives along that line.
And Jim Henson, of course, is the creator of the Muppets. So this kind of segues a little bit into like how the monsters were created. And many of these, of course, were used on Sesame Street. A lot were used on The Muppet Show and in other films and movies. So we've just chosen to talk only about Sesame Street tonight. So a little bit of his background is he brought extensive experience with puppeteering to the team. He embraced television as a creative mechanism for puppeteering. So previous to his work, so kind of just try to visualize this, all the puppetry was really done on a stage, kind of like this. Imagine like a little blanket here and your puppets going like this. So it was really two-dimensional. But Henson really saw television as a whole new medium. So you could use all four sides of the television screen to bring in your puppets. His original work was on the television show Sam and Friends, and which was like a puppet show. And he actually was on the show with his wife Jane, and she gave up puppeteering to raise their four children. So she did not really work on Sesame Street. She was busy at home with the children. Muppets really take on their own personalities, as you know, and often these personalities take, it says up to a year in our research, but really as we've been watching these videos, you can see, and you'll see when in the videos that we show in a little bit, they really emerge into their own person, and that can take really years to develop. So Henson really believed that he would create a Muppet, but then he would tweak it and change it and really develop a strong relationship with that Muppet in order to make it fully formed. So he played roles such as Ernie, Guy Smiley, and Kermit, but also created characters like Grover, Bert and Ernie, Cookie Monster, Oscar the Grouch, and Big Bird, and many lesser known characters as well. And so we thought this quote was really important. Jim's monsters were monsters. They wrestled, they bunked, they body slammed, and they slugged, and occasionally they ate each other. So they were really meant to be monsters.
So as we started thinking about this project, we thought theory helps us think about how things work in the world. And we decided to focus our lens through intersubjectivity theory, which is just really a way of thinking about how people interact with one another to create our social world that we end up in. So here's some key tenets from this theory that have helped us understand what we're studying from this lens. So from this understanding, we know that agreement between people, between social actions and issues helps develop who we are. We also develop common sense or shared meanings, which means this is, we kind of do this each day, we go, oh, that makes sense. Well, that's because this came about through a common way in our social worlds. We also think about sharing divergent thinking, that we can hold different perspectives at the same time, but still be in the same frame thinking about it. And then the idea of energy moving between people and making a shared experience. So if you think about a situation, maybe you're with a family member who's passing away, and there's other people there, that sad experience, that emotional experience, becomes a common bonding experience. And we use emotions quite often in our world to make such connections. Whether they be sad or excited, they help us bond together. And then the idea of it flowing from the individual to the social and back again. So it's pretty much that our social worlds help develop who we are, but then we in turn also help develop our social world. And these things really helped us think about what was happening with the monsters of Sesame Street.
So to be honest, when we started the project, we really had no idea of how extensive the Sesame Street monsters were. Depending on the source that we consulted, we found that there were approximately 125 monsters who had been active on the show since its beginning. So obviously, we did not research all of them because that would have taken, you would have been here all night. But we decided to just narrow it down to four key monsters. And we We aim to show how these monsters represent intentional ways that they're influencing us and our children to develop our personal and social cultural identities. So we chose 8 from the 125 initially, and we just picked ones that we thought were really well known. And from there, we eliminated this down to 4. So we eliminated Grover because he has so many multiple personalities. He was really difficult to analyze. We eliminated Elmo because he came later. So he emerged in 1984. So there weren't early on clips of him to watch. And then also Harry and Telly were two that we were originally had researched, but they actually had long lapses of time that they were not active in the show. So we really essentially just picked characters that had been active the entire time from 1969 until now.
So we're gonna start out with Snuffleupagus, or Snuffy as his nickname came to be known. And Snuffy was introduced really as Big Bird's imaginary friend. They wanted Snuffy to be relational to the children who have imaginary friends and who also sometimes struggle with people not believing in their imaginary friends. So the early clip that we're going to show you, I want you to look at what Snuffy looks like and also think about his character in this clip.
Oh, those are so pretty. Oh, hi. I was just looking at the flowers and thinking they really need to have some water. So I was going to go find a watering can and put some water in it and sprinkle water all over the flowers. It helps them grow, you know. So let's see. I think that Gordon has a flower sprinkling can. Hark, what's this? What a funny looking thing. Well, I don't think I've ever seen you before here on Sesame Street.
Oh, hello.
I'm Big Bird. Who are you?
Oh, that's easy. I'm, yes, I am a Snuffleupagus.
A Snuffleupagus?
Yeah.
Gosh, you hardly ever see those anymore. Well, I've never seen one before anyway. Well, how do you do? How are you?
Oh, sad. Very, very sad.
Aw, well, maybe I can help cheer you up. You see, I was going to water those flowers there, and you could maybe help me. I'm going to get a sprinkle can and sprinkle water on them. Want to help?
Oh, you want to water these flowers right here?
That's right.
Please stand back.
Stand back? Wow! Gosh, that's fantastic! Boy, you're really wonderful, Mr. Snuffleupagus.
Oh, thank you, Bird.
Well, you know, could I tell my friends about you? I'd like to have them see you. I'll go tell them. Wait till they see you. They'll be so excited. I'll go tell them. Hey, Gordon!
What's happening?
Oh, it's exciting. Wait till you see what I just saw.
What did you see?
Well, he said he was a Snuffleupagus.
What?
Well, a Snuffleupagus, he's kind of big, and he has a long nose.
Mm-hmm. A long nose.
A lot like an elephant, I think.
Yeah.
And a big tail like a dinosaur, and green eyes, and shaggy fur all over him. And he watered the flowers.
Where is he, Big Bird? Mm-hmm. Where is this Snuffle?
In the playground.
In the playground.
Sure. You want to see him?
Yes, I want to see him.
Come on, wait to see him.
All right.
Okay. Baby, Snuffle up.
So as he goes in there, of course, Snuffy is gone. And in fact, the adult actors in this actually don't believe him and kind of make fun of him for what he's thinking. So as you notice in his character, especially the physical appearance of Snuffy, his eyes are green. They're kind of farther apart, which makes him a little more menacing looking. His fur and his body is much more like skeletal in a way, and definitely very more monster-esque at the very beginning. And we also see that in these early times, Snuffy was really kind of Big Bird's alter ego, if you would say. Big Bird is always kind of happy-go-lucky and up. That's Snuffy was kind of like this, right, and kind of down. And so it was kind of like this idea that it's okay to be sad or feel down at times, that we all kind of feel that way. So then in the 80s, things kind of took a big turn in that there were a lot of high-profile like pedophilia cases and things like that. And Sesame Street started to be concerned that children may not think adults are believing them about those kinds of things. So they decided to have Snuffy not be the imaginary friend. And he actually becomes revealed to the adults so that we now think that Snuffy has been there all along. So we'll show you a little clip of that. And this, later on, I'd like you to notice what Snuffy looks like now and also kind of his behaviors as well.
Welcome to Sesame Street. I'm just waiting here for my good pal Snuffy to show up, because we're going to have a fun day together. I don't know what I'd do without my good old pal Snuffy. Something exciting always happens when old Snuffy's around. La la. Oh, I hear him. Oh, Snuff.
Hey, you bird.
I'm glad you're here.
Ah, thanks, bird.
Well, Snuffy?
What?
What do you want to do today?
Oh, Bert, I can't do anything today. I've got to help my mommy jar cabbages.
What?
We have to jar cabbages, Bert.
But I don't understand.
It means we put cabbages in jars.
Oh, yeah, I know that, Snuffy, but what am I going to do without you?
Oh, gee, Bert, there must be lots of things to do.
No, there isn't. If you don't play with me, I'll have nothing to do all day, and that makes me rather sad.
Oh, I don't want you to be sad, Bird, but I've got to help my mommy. We have lots of cabbages.
Oh, okay. I understand.
Okay. Well, I'll come back later, Bird.
Yeah.
Don't be sad. Bye-bye.
Bye, Snuffy. Oh, now what am I going to do today without Snuffy? What fun could I possibly have?
So in the rest of this clip, along comes a parade of vegetables, of all things. And Big Bird finds out that he can join the parade of vegetables, who happens to have Captain Cabbage at the front of their parade. And the overall lesson here is that you deal with disappointment of your friend not being able to play with you, but another opportunity comes along. So what we notice here, of course, Snuffy's appearance is much more softened, right? He's got big, long, flowy eyelashes. He's actually more up, if you think about the way he was presenting himself, because his head was up more. He had a little more positive demeanor, and actually it was Big Bird, the one that was having a little harder time. And so, you know, the idea that how Snuffy changed over the years to evolve to be less monstrous and more, I guess, kinder and friendlier as a big animal.
Okay, so next we're going to look at The Count, and The Count did premiere in the first episode in 1969, and he's still on the air today, so he's one of the longer-lasting characters. And the first episode that we watched, you're going to see that children are learning number sense. There's things, concepts like one-to-one correspondence, geometry, looking at pyramids and cubes. But also watch how the Count acts like a villain and then has to adjust to social norms.
There we go, my pyramid is finished. Hey, Bert, do me a favor. I want to take a picture of this pyramid I built, so while I get my camera, will you make sure nothing happens to the pyramid?
Oh, sure thing, Ernie.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I just stand here and make sure nothing happens to Ernie's old pyramid.
Greetings. I am the Count.
Hi, Count.
Do you know why they call me the Count? Because I love to count things.
I know.
Ah, look. Blocks. I will count them.
Oh, wait. Those are my friend Ernie's blocks, and he
Silence.
Told me...
I am counting. One, two, three, four. No, I counted that one before. It is difficult to count these blocks in a pile.
Too bad, because Ernie said...
I know what I will do. I will move each block as I count it.
Oh, no. Ernie asked
Silence.
Me to...
One, two, three, four, five, six blocks!
Yes!
Thank you very much.
Oh, boy. Did you see what the Count did? Before I could stop him, he took apart Ernie's pyramid. Oh, boy, I hope Ernie's not upset.
Hello there. I'm ready to take a picture of my pyramid.
Yeah.
What happened to it?
He's upset. Ernie, see, the Count was here, and while he counted your blocks, he took your pyramid apart.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
And you let him do it, Bert?
Well,
Greetings. I have decided to count these blocks again.
Now, hold on, Count. Now, these are Ernie's blocks, remember?
Yeah, you just leave those blocks alone.
Yeah,
you're not supposed to touch my blocks.
I am counting. One, two, three, four, five, six blocks. Now, what did you want to say?
Ernie wanted to say that you should leave those blocks alone. You should leave things where you find them. Yeah, that's what he wanted to say.
Oh, did I move his blocks?
Yes, you did.
I am sorry. One, two, three, four, five, six blocks! Thank you very much.
Well, I sure told him a thing or two, didn't I, Ernie?
Yeah, but Bert.
Oh, but we've watched that clip about 7 times, and it just cracks me up every time. So the cow in this episode is obviously playing the role of the villain. And he really has no concern for other people's property, mainly Ernie's pyramid. The Count destroys it, he puts it back, and then destroys it again for more emphasis. And you notice that every time we see the Count, we hear the Count music. And so kind of watch in the next episode if that changes or not. So Bert and Ernie, they're also adapting to these social norms. Bert is sticking up for his friend. Bert is trying to be the protector of Ernie and naming emotions like he's upset and really trying to protect that pyramid for his friend. So the lesson learned is you should probably leave things where you find them. But the Count doesn't quite get the message in the first episode. So watch how it changes in the second one.
Here comes the Count. Looking for something to count, I bet. But boy, have I got a big counting surprise for him. Hey, Count.
Ah, greetings, Oscar.
Yeah. How would you like to count the number of the day?
Huh? Ooh, why, I always love to count the number of the day. What is the number of the day?
Well, it's zero. That means it's nothing. Zero is nothing. Zip, nada. So try counting that count.
All right, Oscar, I will. Ah, how many horns do you have on your head?
What? Horns? None.
That's zero horns on Oscar's head. Ah. And, how many bananas do you see on that tree?
That tree?
Mm-hmm.
That's not a banana tree. There's no bananas. There's none.
That's zero bananas on that tree. Yes.
What? Wait, no, that's not what I...
And how many dancing ducks do you see going by? Hmm?
None. Now stop counting.
That's zero dancing ducks. I love it.
Listen, I said stop.
Okay, Oscar. How many more times do you want me to count zero?
None.
That's zero more times. Oscar wants to hear me count zero.
Ah!
Oscar, how many more times are you going to come back up so that I can see your smiling face? Hmm?
None, and I'm not smiling.
That's zero times that Oscar's coming back up, and zero smiles. Counting zero can be so much fun. That's zero zeros.
Okay, so you can see that one actually aired on HBO, because now it is on HBO, or being produced by HBO. It's still on PBS. But in this later episode, the Count has gone through some personality changes. He's a lot friendlier. And he looks actually kind of happy. He's giggling. He's looking at the camera. He's interacting with the Count. He's kind of teasing him. But he's really playful. And we only hear the Count music that at the end. So he's really changed quite a bit. He looks a lot softer. You can see that the color purple has changed now to like a lavender. And he's just more kind of what I call kind of snuggly. Like you can almost envision him being a little stuffed animal that kids would go to bed with at night, right? And he's just very personable. So he's really changed from this villain with the scary music to now much more approachable and just having a really fun time counting and interacting with Oscar.
So of course we had to talk about Cookie Monster. One of my favorites. In the early Cookie Monster, you'll see here, probably the one most of us remember the best, so I'll have you just watch the clip here of his early days.
And now it's time for everybody's favorite wacky stunt show, Beat the Time! And here's your host, Guy Smiley!
And now let's meet today's first contestant, Mr. Cookie Monster from Sesame Street. Come on!
Hi, Guy.
Are you ready for your wacky stunt?
Me no know. If me do it, what me win?
You will win a cookie.
A cookie?
Yes, let go of me, Cookie Monster. Yes, all you have to do, listen closely.
Yeah, me listening.
You have to find three things.
Yeah.
That's three things.
Three things.
That rhyme with the word rain.
Three things that rhyme with word rain.
You got it. But you've got to do it before the arrow on our clock reaches zero.
Oh.
Okay. Ready? Get set? Go!
When do we start?
You start now!
Go!
Will he do it? Cookie Monster has got to find three things. That's three things that rhyme with the word rain.
Cane!
Wonderful, wonderful, Cookie Monster. That's one thing that rhymes with the word rain. Now you've got to find two more.
Hey, a big blue monster just stole my cane.
The Listen, we're doing a television show here right now, sir. I'm sorry.
Hey, are you guys smiling?
Yes, but you've got to get off the stage right now.
Is this Beat the Time?
Yes, it is, but we're playing the game here, and Cookie Monster's got to find two more things that rhyme with the word rain.
Chain!
Wonderful, Cookie Monster. That's two things that rhyme with the word rain.
Me go find one more thing.
One more thing you've got to find. What's at the end of this chain? Listen, I'm sorry, but you gotta get off right now because we're playing the game. Get off. Because Cookie Monster
really has... Guide. Yes. Me go find nothing.
You're gonna find something.
Turn around behind you.
No, you're
over
trying
here.
To
what rhyme
you.
With rain? Me no. go find nothing.
Think of something.
Me got it.
Yeah? What can he do? His time is over. There's only a few seconds left. Can he do it in time? Wait a minute. What's that sound? It can't be. It sounds like...
Choo-choo train!
Can you get the train out of the studio?
I have a photograph, Mr. Sawyer, next
play! Aboard for Joanne, Chico, and oh, come on, God! Hand me one!
Let's get the autograph, Mr. Cookie!
All aboard!
Shut it away!
All right, give me your ticket. Don't cry, don't push. Get off the train, Elephant, get off!
So we see in this early time, Cookie Monster basically has so little control over eating cookies that he will do just about anything to get his cookie, even steal things from people in that way. And so his idea that throughout that whole clip was much more of the destruction and kind of the things that monsters do. Okay, so let's take a look at Cookie in about the mid-2000s and what was happening with him then.
Well, me known for eating cookie when me don't fish out hooky trying to throw loyal fans a curve. What's he doing eating fish or vegetable dish? Man, he sure got lots of nerve. Well, me answer you straight when you're filling up plate taking only cookies, all wrong. Cause you also got to eat fruit or veggies or meat if you wanna be healthy and strong. Yo,
healthy food, boy, it tastes so good.
Me want healthy, dude, cause me eat healthy food. Love it, oil or stew. We love it, oil or chew. You feel just great. Eat some healthy food. Me promise that when you eat varied menu, you get more out of every meal. You need balanced diet. Come on and try it, not believe how great you feel. Munch some carrots or beans or poultry and greens along with your chocolate chip. And banana or plum will make you go yum. Nutrition, it really hit. Girls,
healthy food.
Oh boy, it tastes so good. Me want healthy food. Cause me eat healthy food. Me love it, oil or stew. Me love it, oil or chew. You feel just great if you eat some healthy food.
So I think I was sharing with a friend of mine our research, and I said, you know, Cookie Monster these days eats fruits and vegetables, and she was like, that's just wrong. So we see not only in this clip, right, that Cookie has joined the healthy food call and is helping our kids think about how to have some self-control and not eat cookies all the time, but to eat healthy food. But it also is interesting that they tapped into the hip-hop culture that was going on during this time. And in fact, this particular clip has been viewed over 5 million times on YouTube, which tells you how ubiquitous the Sesame Street character Monster is and how much he means to our people in this world.
Okay, so last but not least, everyone's favorite monster, Oscar the Grouch. And so Oscar does premiere also in the first episode from 1969. And you'll be kind of surprised maybe at his initial appearance. So kind of be watching for that. So we'll show the clip and then we'll talk a little bit more about it.
Come on, Sally. Listen. Oh, you hear that noise?
Yeah.
Look, that's Oscar. Oscar lives in here. Oscar!
Don't bang on my can.
Oh, come on, look. You've met everybody else on Sesame Street. You're going to meet Oscar no matter what he says. Oscar, come on out.
What?
Come on out. Say hello to Sally.
Go away. Close my can lid, dear. You're letting all the fresh air and sunlight in. Boy, I hate that.
Look, Sally, Oscar's a grouch. He's a grumpy guy. He lives there in a trash can.
In a trash can?
He lives in a trash can. It's not an ordinary trash can. It's a big 3.5-room trash can. But he lives there, and, you know, he's a grouchy guy sometimes. Sometimes he's not, so I think maybe if I talk to him again, I can get him to come out and say hello. Want to try it again? Oscar? Oscar?
Yeah?
Come on out. Now, look, be a nice guy. It's a nice little girl. She's new to the neighborhood. Say hello to her. This is Sally.
Well, is that her?
That's her.
Yeah. Hello, kid.
Hi.
I like you.
You too.
Yeah, I really do. You know why?
Why?
Because in the 30 seconds or so that I've known you, you've never banged on the lid of my trash can. You've never asked me to come out to meet anybody, or even told anybody where I live, or bugged me in general. Which is more than I can say about some people I know.
That's awesome.
Okay, so you can notice that he's not green in the first episode. He's orange, and he's pretty rough looking. So he eventually does, in the next season, season two, is when they change his appearance to be a little bit more, quite not so gruff. And it's kind of interesting, though, to watch how he evolves in the social community, because at first he's obviously very antisocial. Very introverted, does not want to be around people. But everybody kind of keeps including him anyways. They really want him to be a part of the community, and they really try to include him. And there's kind of a pressure for him to be the nice guy and to be social. So let's go ahead and watch the next episode and kind of see how he changes in the second one. Oh. Do you know what, before we start, we wanted to just give a little precursor that it may seem like this is political, but we just thought it was so interesting because it is about Ronald Grump. So I think you'll get a kick out of it regardless of your political party.
Yeah, what do you want?
Are you Oscar the Grouch?
Yeah, what's it to you?
Rotten to meet you. Grump's the name, Ronald Grump, and I'm a grouch builder. I make places for grouches to live.
Yeah, I've heard of you. Why, you're the grouch who built a swamp in a day when nobody else could do it.
That's me. Yeah. And I want to show you what I want to build for grouches right here on Sesame Street. Mm. Yeah, this here is a picture of a building made of trash cans. I call it Grump Tower.
Grump Tower? You mean a grouch would get to live in two cans instead of just one?
You got it. You get one can upstairs and one can downstairs. Oh. It's a duplex condominium. Yeah. And there's room for three grouch families in this building.
Wow. All those grouches living in one spot. Where do you want to build this tower?
Right.
No, wait a minute. We don't want that monstrosity on this spot.
What do you mean, we? This happens to be my spot, Skinny. Go ahead, Mr. Grump.
Well, since this is your spot and you live here, I thought we could make a trade for it. You know, I'll do something for you and you do something for me.
Okay.
Yeah, so your part of the deal would be to get your can out of here, and my part would be to put my building right here and let you live in it. Yeah. And I'll give you three bags of trash for it.
Wow.
Oscar, listen, I wouldn't do this if I were you.
Skinny, do you mind?
If you ask me, it sounds like a rotten deal.
Oh, yeah, you really think so?
Yes.
Okay, I'll do it.
All right, now we're talking. Here, just sign your name on this piece of paper here. It's the contract.
All I have to do is sign my name on it?
That's all it means is you can't change your mind. You gotta stick to what you said.
Okay, let me sign my... There it is. Oscar the Grouch. Okay.
Alrighty.
Okay, I'm gonna get my trash can out of here, and you can put up your building.
Alrighty.
It's a deal.
Hi, David.
Hi. You're not gonna believe it till you see it.
What's going on here?
This is Grump Tower, the first Grouch apartment building in the world. Isn't it, Tony?
No. He traded his trash can spot for this hunk of junk.
That's right, and I can't tell you how happy I am about it. I mean, just look. I've got Grouches living all around me here. Hey, Ronald, this is Ronald Grump. He is my neighbor and the Grouch who built this place.
Scram!
And those are my neighbors, the Grumpies.
Yeah, get lost! Beat it!
Hey, look, the best part is that this is a duplex. So I get to live up here, and Fluffy, my elephant, and Slimy get to live down there. See, and look, Slimy has his own little terrace.
That is kind of nice.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but...
Hey, wait a minute. I didn't know you had any pets living here. Well, yeah, I got my elephant and a worm.
Well, you can't have pets living in this building, see? Because I don't like them, and this is my building, so get them out.
But, hey, you're making me angry.
Good.
Hey, Slimy and Fluffy are everything to me, and where I go, they go.
Well, then you're all getting out of here. Because I don't want any pets living here, see? Look at this. I got a contract, and it says, no pets allowed in. You signed it.
But I didn't see that part.
That's not my problem. No pets.
Well, I want my old trash can back.
Yeah, he wants his old trash can back.
Okay, I'll move my cans out of here, and you can have your old can back.
Oh, yeah, you will?
Yeah, but you gotta pay me, 40 bags of trash.
40 bags of trash?
That's right. It's gonna be a lot of work knocking these cans down, so think it over, chump.
But that's all the trash I got in the world. It's my trash savings. Oh.
Okay. So, obviously, there's a lot we could say about that, but what I want to really emphasize is Grouch's role really changes in this episode. He's kind of the victim, and the people on Sesame Street are really trying to advocate for him and stick up for him. So, his role has really changed now, and people are really... wanting him to have a good life, and they're really sticking up for him. I think the other thing that really changes, besides his appearance, he's a lot more kind of approachable in the second one, is he becomes vulnerable. So we see his vulnerability and kind of his weakness, and other people are trying to bring him into the community and really make sure that things go well for him.
Start to think about all that we've seen in these monsters, we are thinking through this intersubjectivity theory lens, and so we just want to highlight a few things that we've seen through our analysis. So thinking about agreement between people and social actions and issues, the monsters of Sesame Street not only modeled how to problem solve and help others and have empathy, but also how to take action on issues of social justice. As that clip goes on, it's a pretty long clip with Ronald Grump scene, all of the people who live on Sesame Street start bringing their bags of trash, so they'll have 40 bags of trash to buy this can back. So we see that, around the monster of Grouch becomes this ability to bring a community together. We also think about common sense or shared being. And it became common sense, if you think about this, in the 2000s, to eat more healthy and to exercise. And these are kind of things that that the monsters were part of and part of health shaping. Then we think of shared divergent thinking. This book title that you see there, We're Different, But We're the Same, is a book that was published that featured a lot of the monsters and characters of Sesame Street, really helping children learn that even though we all have noses, but our noses all might look different. And throughout the book, it talks about how we're the same but also different, and how that kind of diverse thinking and different perspectives and experiences can add to a richer life. And then this idea of energy moving between two subjects and creating shared experiences. One of my own personal experiences with my son, who is 28 now, and he did end up being a musician. One thing he enjoyed the most about Sesame Street were the musicians that would come on to the show. And I have a little clip of Billy Joel to show you that I remember from this time.
State your name, then beat it.
I'm Billy Joel.
Billy Joel what? Cat got your last name there?
Just Billy Joel. Oh. And this is Marley Matlin.
Hi.
Yeah, hi.
We're Grouch groupies.
We love grouches.
You love grouches? Oh, yuck.
And whenever I throw away a used piano, I give it to a grouch. And this time, you're it.
Oh, yeah? Oh, a used piano, man. Huh.
And Marley helped me push this here.
Yeah? Well, while you're pushing, why don't you just both shove off? But leave my piano.
Not yet.
Hmm?
Because with the piano comes a song. A love song.
A love song? Oh.
You hear the song, and then you get the piano.
Well, I knew there had to be strings attached.
This one's for you, Oscar.
Right from the heart.
Right from the heart? Oh, I'm gonna hate this.
Don't go changing just to please me. 'Cause being friendly's not your style. Don't wanna hear you saying thank you.
I won't.
But I would hate to see you smile.
I never smile.
Just be grouchy, really grouchy. You've done it pretty well so far.
Oh, compliments. This is getting pretty sticky.
I took the bad times. I'll take the worst times. I'll take you just the way you are.
The way I am, huh? Huh, I'll change that.
So I just, you know, this idea that the monsters of Sesame Street have been part, especially in my life, and I think many others, of creating these moments of shared experiences through music. And they have become an important part of that. And finally, we think about how it flows between individuals and our culture, and how these two inform each other. This is a snapshot of a website that Sesame Street runs right now, called Sesame Street in Communities. And on this website, you can log on and actually see things that are happening in different communities. You can become a part of making your communities a better place. And it also has resources for parents and kids. And in this way, Sesame Street and the monsters connected to it continue to influence our community. And at the same time, our communities are influencing who we are and who our children are as they're growing up.
So just in conclusion, we want to just thank all the people that helped us with our presentation. Thanks to Darlene and Linda Garcia for helping us with technical support, and for Catherine for all kinds of technical support. And we also wanted to acknowledge Alan Christensen and Dave Blair, two of our colleagues who let us bounce ideas off them and gave a better share of their afternoon to help us one afternoon. And to our kids, because my kids have watched a lot of Sesame Street over the summer and into the fall as we've been preparing. So I wanted to thank them for that as well. So it's 9:01 in the morning, and sunlight beats down on you as you lie on top of your bunk bed. You're a little uncomfortable in your superhero feety pajamas, but you don't mind. It's time for your favorite show, time for Sesame Street. You reach up and turn the set on. Sunny day, sweeping the clouds away, and you smile. A big yellow bird waves to you to come along, to come and play with them all, and to go to where the air is sweet. And so you do. Life, you think, is good. Thank you.